Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
The season for the Jazz, well, it's officially over, but there is some good news coming out of Utah today. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be with you on the afternoon drive. If you're still following the Utah Jazz, well, you had some heartbreak last night as Utah drops Game 7 to the Denver Nuggets, 80-78. I don't know if we'll have a ton of time to dive into this later on in the show, so we might as well start right here. Utah was very bad for 2.5 quarters in this game. They figured things out. Rudy Gobert started to play like a max player. Well, Rudy was fantastic in the fourth quarter. Stat line looks good if you didn't watch the game, but Rudy was very ineffective throughout a quarter and a half to start this game. And so the positives for the Jazz, they put themselves in a position to steal this game, even though Denver had 16-17 point lead at one particular time of this game. It looked like Denver was going to run away with it. But you blow a 3-1 series lead. And it was definitely a showdown for the ages. I think historically, we will remember the first round of the playoffs in the bubble, Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell. I mean, that was the best storyline of the first round, hands down, the way these two exchanged blows. And last night, neither player was fantastic. Neither player was highly efficient from the field. But you expect that in game sevens. I mean, I think the statistic was, in the history of the NBA, we had 16 players score 40 or more in Game 7. Those players were 8-8. So scoring 40-plus, it's not a recipe for success in Game 7. Sure, it can work, but it's not as if, okay, you have a player get to 40, you will win Game 7. That's not the way it works. I mean, things tighten up in Game 7s. Rotations are a tad bit more tight. You see, and I'm talking about rotations on defense, especially in this era of zone defense, a lot more tight. You see defenses really pick it up specifically in the paint. We saw that last night. I think Nikola Jokic was terrific for the Denver Nuggets in the fourth quarter. Hit a couple of very difficult shots. But the season ends with what could have been a bonehead play by Denver. And Utah had one last shot. A prayer from Mike Conley that looked good off of the left wing as soon as it left his hand. Donovan Mitchell thought it was going in. He's standing on the right wing, wide open. But had Conley attempted a pass over to Mitchell, he wouldn't have made it in time. There was 1.4 seconds left when Conley got the ball to around just past half court, so he had to put up the shot. That thing was halfway down. It spins out. Utah blows a 3-1 series lead. And while I hope it doesn't get brought up, historically, I hope we don't focus on this. Donovan Mitchell was great, but if you go back to game one, the 8-second violation altered the course of that game and ultimately the series, because the Jazz just could not get game. They couldn't win number four. They just couldn't. Had three opportunities to do it. Couldn't figure out a way to grab that fourth win. Season comes to an end. And if I was to tell you at the beginning of the year, which was a long time ago, so around this time last year in 2019, if I would have told you that the Jazz would be out in the first round, A, you would have laughed. B, you would have called me a hater. And I think C, you would have looked and said, okay, who went down? Now, I know Bojan Bogdanovic went down. I understand that, but the Nuggets were not at full speed either. And so where did things go wrong for the Jazz? Ultimately, I think Bojan means more to Utah than Gary Harris or Will Barton means to Denver. But Rudy Gobert vanished and was inconsistent at times in this series, and that's a problem for a guy that could be on tap for that Supermax $240 million deal. Now, I said there was some good news for Utah, and the good news comes from a report that broke earlier today that Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz are expected to agree on a max contract extension. Now, this is according to Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports. The Jazz will finalize a five-year max extension at the start of free agency, which we still don't know exactly when that is going to be. But boy, that has to make Jazz fans smile, doesn't it? And the NBA is yet to set the salary cap for next season, which I think is even better news for the Jazz that this is agreed upon in principle. Because the league's initial $115 million projection would make this about a five-year deal at around $170 million. But there's so much economic uncertainty that you really just don't know what it's going to be. Nonetheless, Donovan Mitchell has no desire to leave Utah. There were rumors floating around Twitter and social media that New York would be a spot for him. And I agree. I mean, it makes sense. The Knicks have been starving for a star, and Donovan Mitchell would fit that bill. But the report today, Donovan Mitchell will in fact re-up with the Utah Jazz as soon as free agency begins on a max contract. So the glass today, half full for Jazz fans, even though I'm sure they're a little somber based on how the season came to an end. We have a lot to get into on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Tomorrow we're going to hit the NBA heavy. But today I want to focus on high school football because we're 2 days away from week four. Can you believe it? We're about a month into the season. We didn't know if we'd get high school football. We didn't know if we'd get more than one or two games. We're preparing for week four as Emory will play host to the Union Cougars this Friday. So we will talk Emory high school football on the show today. We'll talk about Friday's win over ALA with Coach John Famalo, and then we'll preview Friday's game against Union. Carbon High School, that'll be tomorrow. Coach Howe is going to join us on the show tomorrow to talk about Carbon's loss to Duchesne and what lies ahead for the team this week against Judge Memorial. Very winnable game at home. So we have plenty of local high school football to get into. We're also going to bring in Bill Lasky, former major league pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. There's a lot of baseball to talk about. A few days now removed from the trade deadline, and the Padres look legit. The Padres look like a team that could push the Dodgers for the NL championship. And to be honest with you, there's nobody else in that league that I believe could hold a candle to the Dodgers. I think the Padres could. I think they pushed the right buttons. They did not deplete their farm system, but they still went out and grabbed some reinforcements. And then you look at the American League, and that seems to be as wide open as ever. Tampa and the Yankees, some sparks flying there. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show. So that's what's happening right now. Let's take a look at the scoreboard tonight. And in the NBA, we have another Game 7. Houston will take on Oklahoma City. I got to tell you, I typically don't say this, but I am openly rooting for Oklahoma City. I think I'm openly rooting for Chris Paul. I mean, what this guy's been able to accomplish with OKC, it's hard not to root for this guy. It's hard not to root for the Thunder and the way Sam Presti has done things in OKC. So tonight, Game 7 coming up, Thunder Rockets. The winner will move on and take on the Lakers. And here's an interesting tidbit. By the time the Lakers play either the Thunder or the Rockets, the Celtics will have played three games. The Heat will have played three games as well in the Eastern Conference. And so the way things are spaced out as far as the playoffs are concerned, it's a little different. It's a little different this year, to say the least. But as soon as a team is done, they have to leave the bubble. So the Jazz, they're out of the bubble in Orlando already. That just limits the amount of people that could pass on COVID and disrupt what's happening in the bubble right now. Let's take a look at the scoreboard in Major League Baseball. Games coming up at the 4 o'clock hour. We get the Cardinals and the Reds. The Blue Jays will travel to meet the Marlins at 4:40 as well. 5 o'clock hour tonight, can't miss baseball. Tampa Bay and the Yankees. Charlie Morton on the mound for Tampa. The Rays, they hold the lead in the AL East. That's an important contest. 5:05 tonight, we get the Nats and the Phillies. The Cubs at the Pirates. And then we get Atlanta at Boston and Detroit at Milwaukee. 6:05 tonight, Cleveland will take on the Royals. We get the Rangers and the Astros. The White Sox will take on Minnesota. Two games in the 7 o'clock hour. San Diego at the Angels. And then we get the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. Quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to break for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up. Plus, we'll catch up with Emory football coach John Famalo right here on Drive Time Sports.
For every passing play, every running play, every win, and every loss, there is one man making all the calls. Get ready to dig deep into this week's game and relive all of last week's plays. It's Real Talk About Your Team.
This past Friday, we had a great performance from the Emory Spartans as they topped ALA 20-13, trailed 13-0 at halftime. Shut out ALA in the second half, scored three touchdowns, picked up their first victory of the season to move to 1-2. We're going to talk about that and more right now. Joining us over the phone, we have Coach John Famalo. We'll also preview Friday's game against Union. Coach, it's great to get you back on today. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate you having me on, Jordan.
Yeah, definitely, Coach. I know it is always more fun to talk about a win, and that's exactly what we get to do this week. Had an opportunity to catch up with you following the victory this past Friday against ALA. And really, Coach, going back and looking at the performance, I mean, I don't know if you could have asked for anything more outside of a few penalties inside the 10-yard line, but this team in the second half against ALA was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that's probably been one of our better, our best half of the year so far, and so I thought on both sides of the ball, we did a good job. And I say offensively, with the exception of those penalties down in that red zone, the kids played well.
Yeah, and when you go back, Coach, I know that was a big bother for you at the end of the game on Friday when you and I talked post-game. When you go back and you look at some of those penalties that were costly, I mean, that game could have very easily been 35-13, 35-7. I mean, a couple of things break another direction. When you go back and you look at those penalties, what was your thought, not only on the calls, but the way that your team, responded to those penalties that could have been backbreakers?
That's what we've done in the past is, we've made mistakes and, teams capitalize on them. And, I think our kids continue to grind and, that was a good thing is that, even though it put us in some bad situations, we didn't make things worse. That's what sometimes happens. And so I think for the most part, I think the kids understood, the penalties they had. We certainly could clean that up and there's things that are fixable. And so, from that perspective, I think the kids are learning from that, but we do have to get better as we play better teams that, you can't make those mistakes.
You and I did talk about the one touchdown for ALA right out of the gate. I mean, really, it's just a miscommunication, a missed assignment. Otherwise, they don't score on the opening drive. And when you get through that, I guess they did have one fairly efficient drive. But, Coach, this was a solid defensive performance through and through.
Yeah, no, I was really happy with my front. I thought, the front four played well. My linebackers were, really active and causing a lot of chaos. And so, that's, the game plan that we had. And, with the exception of that first drive, and then right before the half, we gave up that, that drive. I thought our kids settled in and figured out what they were trying to do. And just physically, I thought we outmanned them. And, that felt good to know that, again, you can handle, the physicality of the other side of the team, and, I thought they did a good job that way.
Yeah, Coach, we always talk about experience, and this is a team that does have a lot of experience, but in the same token, it's experience that they haven't necessarily had a lot of experience winning. I mean, those situations have been few, far, and in between, and so when you talk to the seniors, I know that the expectations were extremely high, but after you get a win, and you look at the first three games, and you look at the things that have gone right, do you feel that that belief is really there within that senior group now, maybe more than ever?
Yeah, no, and that's the thing, and the biggest thing is, like I say, we've had a lot of experience, had a lot of, reps with a lot of these kids, but, now they have to understand, even though we got our first win, they can't settle. And I think that's what the kids have realized is like, okay, now we've experienced that we can't settle and think this is, we've got one win. There's a lot more work to do. And so, I think that attitude has been a lot better than in years past where, we've struggled trying to get wins and figure out how to win. And so, I think the kids are starting to understand, everything that it takes to win a ball game and, not settling for just winning ball games, but trying to get better.
Talking about the offense in this game, Coach, I know it was only a 20-point performance, but again, it could have been a lot more. We saw some great things. We saw efficient drives, even drives that didn't end in scores. We saw it take chunks of change off of the clock, and we saw a great balance between the run and the pass. In fact, over the last 2 years, it may be the most complete game that this offense has played, and when you watch it, it just makes sense now as to what you guys want to accomplish, right? And so, going back and looking at the RPOs, and that was a conversation that you and I had, were you happy with the way Riker finally controlled this offense?
Yeah, I think so. The second half, I thought he did a really good job throwing on the edges. You know, they're not big plays, but, you know, a 2 or 3 yard gain, you know, that helps get the box a little bit thinner, you know, to get guys outside of the box. And now it allows Jace to run, and, you know, he has some running lanes. And so, again, it's that game you play, and I think he's starting to understand that, you know, it's a numbers game. And once he can figure that out and become a little bit more efficient on his reads, I think, you know, he's just going to get better. And so, you know, it was a great balance from both sides, but, you know, he's got to take advantage when, you know, they're going to stick 8 kids in the box like they are, because Jace is a good runner. We got to be able to take advantage on the outside.
And I know that there's an art to play calling, right? I mean, it's like playing checkers. You hope your play on first down sets up your play on second down, vice versa. You move all the way down the wire. And it looked like in this game, Coach, there were plays that maybe appeared meaningless at the time, but when you take a bigger look at it, it's set up play X, play Y, right? It continued to move the offense down the field. I just thought through and through, everything worked, especially in the second half.
Yeah, no, and that's a lot of it. Again, it's that chess match against the defensive coordinator and making sure you got the right plays. And, you know, I thought Coach Jess did a good job of making some calls to help relax, you know, Riker and put him in situations that he could make some easy reads and make some easy throws. And, you know, it was a great game plan going in and, you know, executed well the second half. And at the end of the day, you know, we got the victory.
Again, our guest right now is Coach John Famala with the Emory Sport and Football Team. Coach, let's fast forward to this Friday. Union comes to town, and this is a team that we've had some great games with over the last 10 or so years. I mean, we've had some games that have come down to the wire. We've had some fantastic plays, some fantastic finishes, and I look forward to this game specifically this Friday because I think it's a great gauge to tell where this Emory team is at. Union's had some success over the last couple of weeks. They beat Uinta. They beat Grand. That 58-27 win against Grand is a game that you can kind of look at to the future as far as what's in store for region play. It seems like it's the perfect time to play a Union squad.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I say, I think they're a well-coached team. Coach Slavin does a good job with his team, and so, you know, we got to make sure all of our ducks are in a row to make sure we can handle what they're bringing, because they're a pretty talented team on the offensive side, and defensively, you know, they've been kind of don't break kind of a team, but they're looking to outscore you, and so we got to be able to match that and understand responsibilities and take care of what we need to defensively to keep him in, keep their quarterback in check.
Talking about their quarterback, this is a kid that can throw the football, but he's definitely more comfortable running. Talking about Boone Latham, who had a fantastic game this past week against Grand. And, Coach, it is somewhat similar, right, to what we saw against ALA. I mean, Hiram Morley is a kid that can throw the football, but he's obviously more effective when he's running outside of the pocket, creating some havoc. And I see some similarities between these two quarterbacks going into Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, a game, similar game plan against, you know, we have against ALA. With the Latham kid, because, I mean, he's really dynamic outside the pocket once he gets his, you know, using his feet, whether it's designed runs or, you know, him scrambling and creating things. That's one thing he's really good at. And so somehow we got to make sure, you know, we try to make him be left-handed in a sense and make him do the things he doesn't like to do. And hopefully that's throwing a little bit more and, you know, handing the ball off to his running backs. And so, you know, we got to try to game plan that way to keep him in check and, because he can really hurt you.
Yeah, I think, Coach, in a game like this, it's too simplistic to just talk about their offense against our defense, because, again, what you want to do offensively is eat chunks of clock. And as you alluded to, Union wants to get into a track meet. They want to try to outscore you. That's what makes this so fascinating. I mean, we could spend time talking about the defense and what you do to slow them down, but offensively, it's just as important that you have efficient drives and play the field position game against a squad like this.
No, and that's it. And so, I mean, the more you can stay on the field and keep their offense off the field, you know, I think that's to our advantage. So they say we're not looking for big plays. If we can continue to chunk down the field and get first downs and go all the way down the field, you know, I'm just happy with that as, you know, 60, 70-yard play for the fact that, again, it limits the amount of touches their offense and Latham have.
Offensively, I've always thought of this Emory team not really being a big time offensive of team. Like it's not a team that you traditionally want to see, or you will see 60, 70 yard touchdowns out of. Coach, we had some long touchdown plays rather against ALA, proving that you got some horses on this team that once they get in the open field, they're athletic and tough for the opposition to bring down.
Yeah, you know, Jace proved that again. I mean, he ran the ball well, our line blocked well, and, you know, he picked his spots. And, you know, at some point, you are going to get one to break through, and so you got to take advantage of that, and he did that. And so it's nice to know to have that weapon that, you know, you can pound it, and, you know, if he does break it, you know, that's just a bonus for us.
Coach, I don't have the official stats in front of me, but it just seems, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, it just seems like Jace Mangum was a little bit more of a factor in the offense as well, and I'm curious is if that was the plan, and did that open things up for Jace Curtis as well?
I don't know if Mangum was a plan. Again, it's a lot of it, you know, how Riker reads and what he's seeing, and again, when they get a few more guys and they start sending linebackers in to stop the run, you know, that opens a few more things for Mangum. And so I think that was the case. You know, they started sending linebackers and Jace was able to work the middle and, you know, Riker was able to find him. So, I mean, I think it's, I don't know if it's necessarily game planning, as it's more of, you know, Riker's making the right reads and making the right throws and kids are making some great catches.
Yeah, I paid attention to what Jace was doing in the slot, Jace Mangum in the slot. And really, if you can get him one-on-one with an outside or inside linebacker, it seems like a beautiful matchup.
No, we'll take that matchup any day. I mean, we struggle with that when we run defense and he's on the offensive side is matchups. And so, you know, him against a linebacker, you know, we'll take that matchup, you know, 9 out of 10 times.
Coach, we'll end by talking about injuries. Again, anything significant to report on this team?
Well, we're still pretty healthy. Like I say, we're 3 games in. Kids are a little banged up, but for the most part, we don't have anything serious. And so we'll continue to keep our fingers crossed and hopefully kids can stay healthy.
And one more question. When we talk about Union, what's the key point of emphasis now that you've had some time to dissect what this opponent looks like? What's the key point for this squad?
I think for us, again, is we got to make sure we control Latham. That's the big key for us. And so, again, whether it's controlling him through ball control on the offensive side and continue to play efficient drives and long drives to keep him off the field, or whether it's we keep him inside the box and make sure there's a lot of hats around him when he tries to run. And so, you know, I think that's the key. And so there's a couple ways we're trying. And again, whether it's through offense or defensively, making sure everybody has their assignments and making sure I got 2 or 3 guys spying him to make sure we keep him in the box.
Coach, it is always fun to get you on. I definitely look forward to the game on Friday against Union. Thank you so much, and we'll see you there.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach John Famalo with the Emory High School football team. Live coverage of Friday's home game against Union will begin at 6:25 right here on KOAL, and then kickoff will follow at 7. Tomorrow, we're going to flip sides. We're going to talk Carbon High School football. Coach Phil Howell will join us right here on Drive Time Sports. That'll be tomorrow. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we return, we'll talk Major League Baseball. Active trade deadline, and now we're down to the final 25 games of the regular season. All things MLB coming up with Bill Lasky when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're going to talk Major League Baseball. You know, we're getting down to it. We're down to the final 25 games or so of the season. I can't believe it. But now with the expanded playoffs, things get a little bit more interesting. We're past the trade deadline, and so there is an awful lot to talk about, and we'll do it right now with our next guest, Bill Lasky, joining us over the phone right now. Bill, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, it's baseball time, and we're in the month of September, and like you said, 3 weeks left to go, and we're going to find out who the top 16 teams are.
Yeah, the top 16, and we can talk about that in a moment because I still think it waters down the playoff picture just a little bit, but it does create an element of the unknown, and I think some teams really took that unknown and they ran with it at the trade deadline. And we can start by talking about your team, the San Francisco Giants, a team that you cover in depth. Of course, you're an analyst. You work weekend, post-game, pre-game show for the Giants. And, Bill, this was a team that I thought could make a move with a lot of veteran pieces. They stay pat, and because of that, well, there's questions surrounding them, but if the playoffs were to begin today, they would be in. So, I mean, I guess maybe it's a catch-22.
It is, and, you know, I question a couple moves. They could have got rid of Gausman and maybe got 2 or 3 different pieces. And, of course, Gausman is a free agent. He pitched very well yesterday against the Rockies. And this team's streaky. There's no doubt about it. They won 8 straight, and then they lose 3. And then they beat up Arizona this past weekend. Now they come out yesterday after a day off and score 23 runs, 24 runs. I don't know how many. It just continued yesterday. It was a very potent offense, but can they do it realistically against some good pitching? And that's what they have not proven to me yet. They can do it against the Angels, the Diamondbacks, teams that are lower in the standings. But when it comes to the Padres as well as the Dodgers, I don't think they can stand against them.
I would agree with that. And again, this is a team that would not be anywhere near, well, you know, I can't even say that, Bill, because if we had the five-team playoff right now just based off winning percentage, they would be in. I don't know if it's sustainable, but we at some point, we got to quit talking about being sustainable and just look at the facts. We're over halfway through the season, and we have a lot of teams, not just the Giants in particular, but I mean, you look at the Rockies, and I know they haven't played great baseball, but they're in the mix. The Marlins, they come back down to earth, and then they'll rally off a couple of wins. They've been terrific away from home. And then you start looking at the pretenders. World Series champion Nationals, they're done in my mind. So again, we can talk about what is and isn't sustainable, yet at the end of the day, we're down to the final 25-20 games.
Yeah, and it really starts, you start looking at schedules, you start seeing how hard some of the schedules are, so how easy some of them are. Of course, the Giants are playing Arizona again this weekend for four games. They play Seattle for two. And then they start playing against the big boys, the San Diego Padres. They have for the following two weekends. But they do finish out the season with Colorado and Arizona, and that could be the nucleus of getting into the playoffs. And that's what I look at the Giants' schedule. And if you look at other teams, Colorado's got a tough schedule. They're playing both the Padres and the Dodgers. So when I'm looking at the NL West, maybe they finish third. But again, I start looking at the Cardinals, the Marlins, like you're talking about. And I'm also looking at the Reds. I just think the Reds have something there that they can get hot on. And we know their schedule's pretty limited on what they have to contend with.
All right, let's talk about the trade deadline. We talked about some of the teams that didn't make a move, the Giants in particular, but let's stick in the NL West. And the Padres, they made a lot of moves. They made five moves, to be exact, on the deadline. None bigger than grabbing Clevinger from Cleveland. This was the main piece, right? This was the big deal at the trade deadline. Every year we have a guy that it seems like six, seven teams could be in the mix for who's going to present the biggest package. Turned out it was the San Diego Padres, who had a lot of position players that they could really maneuver around. One of those guys was Josh Naylor. I couldn't believe Naylor wasn't gathering at bats with the DH in the National League, but I think it's a testament to just how much talent this team has defensively. There's no doubt the Padres were not only the most active, Bill, but the big winners at the trade deadline.
Oh, 100%. And those trades were made weeks ago. Those things were starting to be planned. Those things were implemented. I think as soon as Clevinger got sent down to the secondary phase where he got tested positive and they dropped him in Plesac. And then the rumbling started coming into the clubhouse about these two guys going out in Chicago and things just elevated there. Now, did the Padres pick up an ace? Hell yeah. Clevinger is an ace, no doubt about it. They also have Paddock in there, and he's pretty good. But they didn't have that ace in that starting staff, I didn't think. And that was the move they were looking for because they need somebody to go up against the Kershaws or other number ones that they have to compete against. Their offensive side, I think they can jam four or five runs every day with that lineup. But I think what they did is they looked down pack, and they have them for another couple of years, which is a good move for them. They are so full of talent in their minor leagues, and they didn't even touch their top three guys in the minor league. So it really was prevalent that they made this move, and the move they made with the Mariners picking up Nova, the catcher, I thought that was an outstanding move. Just some of the things they did, I thought it really made them into a contender. And the way they're playing and how consistently these bats are going, I think teams got to look out for them now.
Yeah, and I don't want to go too in-depth on this, Bill, but it is a fact that you have to pay attention to at the trade deadline. So bringing in Mike Clevinger, and you talked about the farm system for San Diego. I think Chris Paddock's been admirable. And same thing with Zach Davies. I think Zach Davies is really overachieved based on his preseason expectations. And then you have Garrett Richards as your fifth pitcher. When you look at a deal for Clevinger, One of the top prospects in all of baseball still sits in San Diego, and that's pitcher Mackenzie Gore. By making this move, Gore stays down and he retains his rookie status going into next season. And from a contract standpoint, that's monumental. And those types of little nuances get overlooked when we talk about the trade deadline. I mean, look, just the Chris Bryant deal with the Chicago Cubs. I mean, you're talking about Bryant fighting for an extra year of service with the Cubs. The Cubs win this deal. An extra year of service is a big deal. And by making this trade, the Padres keep one of their prize prospects down. Well, here, where he keeps his rookie status moving into next year. That's a big deal.
Oh, totally a great deal. And that's what these teams are doing with a 60-game schedule. They understand what they have to do. Even though Joey Bart here was sent down right after spring training too, that was the big question here. Why is he down there? And they brought Hyman and Trump up. But at the same time, he's back up. Sure, he hasn't hit like he can, but he's sure catching defensively a very top prospect for the Giants. And I think that's what a lot of teams did to hold that top prospect in the spring training 2 site or the alternate site. And wait until they can bring him up, and then they have that service time. It's a cat and mouse, and we always talk about it's the business side of it, and that's what it comes down to with all these top prospects getting an opportunity, but getting an opportunity where they can still go back to the minor leagues next year, and it doesn't hurt them for Major League Baseball service time.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now, analyst for the San Francisco Giants. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Bill, one of the teams that did not make a move, there were two in the National League. The Dodgers didn't really do anything. They got rid of Ross Stripling. I think that's an irrelevant move, especially by bringing back up Gonsolin. But when you look at the Atlanta Braves, this was a team that didn't do anything, and it kind of surprises me a bit because they're the top squad in the National League East. They were hit hard with injuries, including losing Mike Soroka. Remember, they tried to bring Puig for some outfield depth, and that didn't work out. I mean, I thought this team would be fairly active at the deadline, and they did nothing.
I did, too. I thought that was one of the teams that would have got a starting pitcher. The starting pitcher is a hole in that nucleus of the Braves. And just like you said, they are so well-balanced in defense and offense. Their bullpen's doing fine. And that was one question. I really thought they were going to do something to pick up a good quality starting pitcher. But as you looked in through the trade deadline, not too many large contracts were picked up. And I think a lot of that is nobody understands for next year if there's going to be fans or not, how much salary is going to have to be eaten up. So I think that was one of the biggest things. And a perfect guy to look at is Johnny Cueto, who's been pitching really well for the Giants. But he's got $23, $25 million left on his contract next year, plus an option. So I was thought the Yankees might even be entertaining to get Cueto in. I even thought Tampa Bay might. But I think the dollar sign really kept the big contracts stable and nobody was trading for him.
Yeah, and again, I mean, when you're trading for someone that might not be under team control moving into next season, especially if it's a pitcher, you're basically renting a pitcher for maybe 4 starts, maybe 4, 5, 6 starts. I mean, that's tough to do. It really is.
That is. And you, even a reliever. I mean, how many innings are you going to get out of a reliever in a month? 10, 15 maybe? I think that's what the big dialogue was when you start looking at starting pitchers. As when we talk about a rental player, how much can you get out of them? And of course, quality control, you know, if you have them for another year, or are they a free agent? You know, I looked at the Gausman thing again. He's a free agent at the end of the year. He basically signed a one-year contract for $9 million. He's been pitching outstanding. Why wouldn't somebody want him? But again, at the end of the year, what happens to him? You're going to have to, is he going to fit in for your future? Is he just going to be there for, as we say, 3 or 4 starts or maybe 8 or 10 relief? And I think that has a lot to do with all the moves. It's a different year, no doubt. And I think a lot of the organization's baseball operations looked at every possible way of trying to get somebody under control. That's why I think that Clevinger deal was a good deal, because he's 2 years under quality control for any team. Do I think the Padres made a steal of a deal? Hell yeah, I do, because I think he's an ace, and he's going to do well in the National League. He's been in the American League for many years, and I think the Padres have really solidified that starting rotation now.
No question. Bill, we'll end with this as we really start paying attention to the playoff picture. And again, it's the extended 8 teams this season, which means 2 from each division get in, and then we'll take the next 2 best teams. In the American League, and maybe not so much in the National League, because I think you have a lot of lower quality teams that'll be battling for that 7 and 8 spot. But this makes the American League playoff picture really interesting. The way it sits right now, Tampa and New York coming out of the East, Cleveland and the White Sox in the Central, Oakland and Houston out of the West. When you look at the final two spots, the Blue Jays somehow are above 500, and then you also have a team like Minnesota and a hot Central division where you have three teams that would be battling basically for two playoff spots. We're looking at all three of these teams getting in. I don't know how much this changes the National League, but I think the American League playoffs could be absolutely bizarre this year, taking a team like Minnesota or maybe Chicago as the final seed to get in, putting them up against a team like Tampa Bay. You don't have that type of drama in the National League.
Not at all. I think the American League is going to be fun, especially last night with Tampa Bay and the Yankees having a little beanball action, Chapman throwing up and in, and then Tampa Bay's manager going off in the post game. It was pretty prevalent that these two teams are going to be in a battle as we continue through the month of September, and it makes American League baseball a little bit more better. And then you look out here with the Oakland A's, they have four or five double hitters within a week. It's going to be real difficult for them to sustain being in first place, and the Astros beat them in that double hitter. So the Astros are getting hot, but I'm right with you. Minnesota, White Sox, Cleveland, it's going to be fun. That's what's great about baseball. And of course, in a short season, now September, it's day-to-day. You can't get into a rut and lose three or four. You'll be out of it.
Bill Lasky again takes the time to join us each week. Bill, it's always a pleasure. Before I let you go, you have to talk about where the listeners can find you and, of course, your side projects as well.
Yeah, at Lasky19 on Twitter. Once, you know, we talk about the Giants a lot. I kind of follow a little bit of everything. And just putting my input on baseball. I love talking about MLB baseball. And the other thing is bigleaguecoaching.pro. If anybody's interested in learning a little bit more about videos and watching baseball instruction, great videos done by Joel Youngblood, Brian Harper, Gary Davenport, Mark Davis, myself. Just some good baseball talk, and these videos are very inexpensive. And you can use and see them for 72 hours. So it's bigleaguecoaching.pro. But thanks again for letting me throw that in to your listeners. And once again, another good week of baseball. Can't wait to continue next week.
Can't wait. Bill, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You have a good day.
Let's break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return, and it's right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Told you, tomorrow we're going to talk a lot of NBA basketball, a lot of it. We'll bring in Tom Perkins. Perkins, an independent NBA scout and also the founder of HoopCityNews.com. And when we have Tom on the show tomorrow, it'll be official as far as the second round, finally. Again, the NBA schedule is so weird, with teams having to play every other day. The Lakers, they wrapped up their series with Portland on Saturday. Here we are Wednesday. They won't know until tonight on who they are playing tomorrow. I'm looking forward to the other second round matchup of the West, though. Denver and the Clippers. I mean, Jazz fans know that this Denver team is legit. They can beat you in a number of ways. I don't think this is a great defensive team, but I think their offense can push the Clippers a tad bit more than Utah. I mean, honestly, and it's no disrespect to the Jazz, that series goes five games maximum. The Clippers are just too good defensively, and the Jazz have a hard enough time scoring points as it is. I think that series would have went five games. The Nuggets, I don't think they beat the Clippers, but I think they can make the series a tad bit more interesting. And then in the Eastern Conference, my goodness. I mean, what to make of the Boston Celtics? What to make of the Miami Heat? Things are heating up in the Eastern Conference. Literally, talking about the way this Heat team has been able to play. And well, right now, we have the Heat and Bucks going at it. I don't think anyone wants a piece of Jimmy Butler. This guy's playing like an MVP, a disrespected MVP candidate. So we have a lot to get into tomorrow as far as the NBA is concerned. We'll also talk more local sports, high school football. Coach Phil Howa of the Carbon Dinos will join us in studio. That'll be tomorrow right here on Drive Time Sports. Do not forget that you can listen to any archive show of Drive Time Sports at CastleCountryRadio.com. Real easy. Just go to the bottom of the page. Everything is right there, podcast style, and you can listen to individual segments by clicking on the Drive Time Sports link. Everything is available for you right there at CastleCountryRadio.com. Out of time of the show today. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.